Your body's trying to tell you something. It's giving you hints that something isn't right. That's why we talk with expert dietitians to break down these early warning signs so you can get closer to understanding what your body is trying to tell you. Women facing weight gain, facial hair growth, and acne can be really hard to process. There has to be an answer to it. Your doctor has probably prescribed you birth control pills to manage your hormones. That may not be the best option. On today's episode of Wonder Why, we bring on Carlin Rosenblum. Carlin is a registered dietitian that helps women. She believes many women today feel out of sync with their bodies, especially when it comes to fertility. Carlin works to uncover the hidden obstacles keeping you from feeling your best and teaches you how to listen and honor your body by focusing on what healthy means to you. Carlin is a registered dietitian with a master's degree in nutrition. Carlin dedicates her work to supporting women during preconception, prenatal, and postpartum periods, which can often be a confusing time and complicated for nutrition. Carlin takes a science-based, personalized approach to health. She believes everyone is different, and nutrition should also take into account for those differences. Welcome, Carlin.
Thanks for having me, Julian.
I'm excited to talk about women's health. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
So when a woman is facing weight gain, abnormal hair growth, and maybe acne, what are you finding in your practice are common root causes of that?
Great question. So typically when we see abnormal weight gain, acne, and facial hair growth, we're thinking some type of hormonal imbalance. Obviously, you know, could be a variety of different types of hormonal imbalances, but we'd want to kind of take a step further and look at other additional factors, such as, you know, are they having regular periods, or is there some sort of impaired ovulation? What does their insulin level look like? Are they in a chronically insulin-resistant state that could be contributing to this? What does their genetic history look like? Are there any hormonal imbalances that occur, you know, in their family? And lastly, like, what does their lifestyle look like? Are they exercising? Are they eating, you know, a healthy diet? Or is their diet rich in processed foods and added sugars that it's going to contribute to inflammation, which can, you know, create hormonal imbalance? What type of environmental toxins are they exposed to or have they been exposed to that can influence hormonal imbalances? Really, again, we want to take a very holistic approach to this patient. Typically, if we are seeing, you know, those three symptoms, in addition to an insulin-resistant state and ovulation, we are generally thinking of polycystic ovarian syndrome or PCOS.
And talk to us about PCOS. What is that?
Yeah, so polycystic ovarian syndrome is technically defined as hyperandrogenism. So again, producing more of those male androgen hormones and ovulation, so lack of period, and polycystic appearing ovaries. That is something that you would have to kind of view on an ultrasound. So typically those three kind of criteria are what would be the formal diagnosis for polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Now, is this diagnosis, like if you have some of this, parts of it, all of it, they collectively call it PCOS? Could you have one of it and they call it PCOS? Or is it something very distinctive that is calling it PCOS?
Yeah. So typically you have to meet at least two of the criteria of the three for it to kind of qualify as PCOS. I will say in my practice as a dietitian, you know, if somebody is experiencing hormonal imbalance, even if they don't maybe meet the full PCOS diagnostic criteria, I'm still going to treat them in a very similar way in terms of the types of food and nutrition and lifestyle activities that we want to incorporate. Because at the end of the day, it all kind of comes down to inflammation. And again, with PCOS, a lot of it is related as well to insulin resistance. So working on those two pieces is really important from a nutrition and lifestyle perspective, and something that, you know, as a dietitian, I can actually help my patients to have some control over. So again, you know, from a nutrition perspective, the therapy is going to be the same. That might not be the case from more of a, you know, traditional medicine perspective.
What is traditional medicine calling for when you have PCOS?
Great question. So a lot of patients are given metformin because of the insulin resistant nature of PCOS. So that is given to help manage some of that insulin resistance. A lot of what happens, however, is that young girls are exhibiting PCOS symptoms and they're going on birth control and it's masking those symptoms for many, many years. So typically hormonal birth control is kind of given as, I wouldn't say a treatment, but a way to kind of manage PCOS until you actually need to deal with it is kind of how I view it. And so for a lot of people, you know, they end up not getting fully diagnosed until much later in life because hormonal birth control has been masking their symptoms for 10, 15 years.
And that's what this show is about. So you're talking about there's symptoms happening, and then there is a way to suppress those symptoms. And what you're suggesting is that women are experiencing symptoms, going to a doctor, they're going to either what? Their gynecologist, they're going to their primary care physician and getting a prescription for birth control to suppress the symptoms that their body is actually trying to tell them that there's an imbalance. And what you're also saying is, correct me if I'm wrong, when you have that imbalance for a long period of time, that PCOS will develop and become what? Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So again, I think it's the hormonal birth control is kind of keeping the PCOS at status quo to a certain extent because it's suppressing the symptoms. So basically what happens is, you know, instead of using that time to really treat PCOS at a root cause level, right? Address diet and lifestyle factors, address the insulin resistance, address chronic inflammation. We're not doing any of those things. And so, you know, when we do actually go off of hormonal birth control, typically it's because we are now ready to start, you know, our fertility journey. And at that point, you know, we've now spent 10 to 15 years not doing anything to actually address the root cause of the issue. So we're kind of in a place where we, you know, start to experience these symptoms again, and we might not fully understand why or what to do.
It sounds like the symptoms can be suppressed for years. Is there any downside to the suppression of those symptoms for years? Or is it just like a get out of jail free card till you have to, you know, start considering your fertility journey?
Great question. So I think, you know, again, we have to kind of look at this from just a holistic lifestyle approach. If we're feeling okay because our symptoms are being artificially masked, does that allow us during that time to continue with certain diet and lifestyle choices that aren't good for us in general, right? You know, how does that impact our food choices, our, you know, lifestyle choices in terms of exercise, sleep, stress management, products that we're using, you know, things of that nature? That again, I think when we are experiencing those symptoms, we are much more motivated to make certain changes and also, you know, again, may live or may make different choices because of those symptoms.
So what you're saying is indirectly suppressing these particular symptoms could lead, and not in every case, but could lead to poor life decisions or poor behavior choice decisions in your personal life that essentially could lead to something else or something worse.
Correct.
So let's take a patient from sort of the beginning of early life, teenage years, maybe early adulthood. What's usually happening amongst that journey that has led or leads to these symptoms and potentially PCOS? What's actually happening?
So, you know, I have a patient that I recently worked with who in her early 30s and had been on hormonal birth control, you know, since she was in her early teens, was ready to go off of birth control because she wanted to start a family. And after going off of birth control, you know, noticed weight gain, resurgence of hormonal acne, and, you know, was never received a period for 6 months. And, you know, at that point, she kind of started to question, okay, is this normal? What's going on? I know I just went off hormonal birth control, which I've been on for many years. Is this kind of just my body naturally readjusting, or do I need to explore this further? So, you know, she went to her OBGYN and they were able to give her a formal diagnosis of PCOS. And she started working with me so that we could, you know, really address again the condition from a root cause level. And so we were able to adjust her diet, add in anti-inflammatory foods that support hormonal imbalance and reproductive health, add in micronutrients that she was low in to, again, help support better insulin sensitivity and reproductive health. And with some modification to her diet and lifestyle, she was able to get her period back and eventually get pregnant.
Is there any common micronutrients that are missing amongst PCOS diagnosis?
Yeah, great question. So typically, and again, this really depends on the individual, but typically we see low vitamin D. If they are given metformin to manage their condition, we typically see a B vitamin deficiency as well. Magnesium is also depleted. Magnesium has a really interesting relationship with our stress hormone cortisol. So when cortisol levels are elevated in more of a pro-inflammatory state, we tend to see low magnesium and other minerals as well, which help to support insulin sensitivity. So one mineral in particular that I typically add to my patient's diet is chromium, because there's a lot of research on how it helps to support insulin sensitivity. So they might not necessarily be super deficient, but typically I add it as a part of their supplement protocol.
Now, a lot of women are getting pregnant after they get off birth control, because that's the part of the journey that they're on, and they're starting to heal from PCOS. During pregnancy, what can you do to start solving your PCOS, or should you wait till after your baby's born? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we definitely want to kind of work on nutrition during pregnancy. Again, typically it is challenging for women with PCOS to get pregnant naturally without any type of diet or lifestyle modification. Again, because of the hormonal imbalance component that really inhibits ovulation. But, you know, if you do get pregnant, I really like to work on making sure we are eating foods that are going to support our nutrition and support hormonal balance, reduce inflammation throughout pregnancy so that we can feel our best. And again, manage some of those symptoms. And really, I think use the 9 months to kind of build healthier behaviors that will then benefit our PCOS management in the postpartum. You know, I think for a lot of people, pregnancy is a very motivating time to make changes to their lifestyle. So it's a really great time to start working with a dietitian if you want to make specific changes to help improve your health.
Is the gut microbiome a component or a mechanism in any of this?
Definitely. I mean, I think our gut is related to every aspect of our health. So definitely we do not want to ignore that. I think from a hormonal imbalance perspective, inflammation perspective, and insulin resistance perspective, promoting a healthy gut is essential. This can be done in a variety of different ways, whether it's adding more fiber to your diet, adding more probiotic-rich foods, or via supplementation. Another key aspect of this, I think, is also reducing those foods that we know creates dysbiosis in the gut and also tends to exacerbate PCOS symptoms. And they tend to be the same, right? Processed foods, added sugar, you know, refined carbohydrates.
What is dysbiosis in the gut microbiome?
Yeah. So dysbiosis is essentially just a fancy way of saying that your gut is imbalanced. So there's a typically overgrowth, too much of the quote unquote bad bacteria and not enough of the good bacteria to balance it out.
Can you start working on that dysbiosis during pregnancy, before pregnancy, and then if you're breastfeeding after pregnancy?
Great question. So typically during fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum, we don't want to do anything that is going to be so dramatic that we're kind of cleansing toxins and releasing them to a certain extent in the body. So any type of kind of gut cleanse, I would say, you would want to do prior to conception, pregnancy, or postpartum if you are breastfeeding. However, you know, again, that doesn't mean we can't do things to support building a healthy gut during those times. So whether, again, it's, you know, introducing foods that support a healthy gut biome, prebiotics and probiotics are the top two, or again, reducing foods that we know contribute to dysbiosis, like added sugar, processed foods, and refined carbohydrates.
What specifically would we not want to do during pregnancy and during breastfeeding to heal the gut?
Again, so any type of cleanse, especially if it involves herbs or things that A, have not been tested during pregnancy, so we don't know their safety, and B, are going to pull toxins from our body for excretion, we don't really want to be doing that during active pregnancy or when we're breastfeeding. So typically, again, kind of want to wait until, you know, we're done, or do it 3 months prior to conception.
So if someone's been listening to this episode so far, it's made it this far, they're thinking, well, maybe this is something I have. Like, where do you start to explore if this is something that you have, or how do you start to heal this?
Great question. I think step one is meet with your OBGYN or a reproductive endocrinologist to discuss your concerns and get a formal diagnosis. Once you receive a formal diagnosis for PCOS, or even, again, if you don't meet the full criteria, but you know something feels off, I definitely would recommend working with a dietitian to help address a lot of these lifestyle factors that can actually have a dramatic influence. I think when it comes to fertility wellness, there is a lot that's without of our control, right? So focusing on things that you can control, I think, can be very empowering for women. And again, lifestyle factors, diet, sleep, stress, exercise, those are all things you have in your control. So I definitely recommend reaching out to a dietitian that can help you with all of those, because they're going to be the ones that can really, again, make you feel empowered on this journey and help you actually address some of the root causes that may be contributing to the symptoms you're experiencing.
And what would you expect from a dietitian?
So every dietitian works differently. In my practice, I, you know, work with women to really understand what is going on physically in terms of their symptoms, their labs, their hormones, what does their diet and lifestyle currently look like? And then what do we need to do to optimize their diet and lifestyle so that they can A, feel better and, you know, reduce their symptoms and actually treat their symptoms, but B, make sure we're focusing on things that they feel they can realistically accomplish, right? I never set goals in my practice that my patients feel they can't do for the rest of their life. I think it's really about learning to adjust our mindset and our lifestyle so that we can achieve whatever health means to us.
Tell us a little bit about your practice and what kind of patients you see.
I am a registered dietitian. I also have a master's of science in clinical nutrition. And my practice, Mother Nutrition, specializes specifically in women's health for fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum. So I'm extremely niche in the population that I work with, but I truly love what I do. And, you know, I think for me, I've kind of seen the power that nutrition can have in enabling women to, you know, achieve their goals of transitioning into motherhood, whatever that looks like for them. I kind of view my role as a facilitator throughout the process. And I also think, because I'm clearly a little bit of a science nerd, it's really, really important to kind of recognize the role that these lifestyle factors can play in the influence of health outcomes for not only these women that I'm working with, but their children and their children's children and future generations.
Carlin, it was an absolute pleasure having you here. Thank you so much for what you do and what you give back to women's health. We really appreciate you being on the show and what you do in your practice.
Thank you. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and I love sharing what I do with the wider world.
We look forward to having you back soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into the Wonder Why podcast. If today's episode resonated with you or reminded you of someone struggling with similar symptoms, please share it with them. It might just be the life-changing moment they need. This show is brought to you by Dietitians for a Healthy America, a nonprofit dedicated to advocating for dietitians and promoting nutritional therapy to enhance health and prevent diseases for all Americans. For more information, visit our website, www.dietitianshealthieramerica.org. Until next time, stay curious and empowered in your health journey.